Hey everybody, this is Catherine from the Media Education Lab, and you're listening to the Courageous Rhode Island Podcast, the show that finds common ground, builds media literacy skills, and encourages curiosity for the people of Rhode Island. In this episode, our host Renee Hobbs talks with author and teacher Kent Lentzy, who wrote a book called Learning to Depolarize, which connects classroom learning to navigating a polarized society. Lentzy explores topics including what citizenship means to him, why media literacy is a fundamental citizenship skill, and how teachers and students can help depolarize our communities.
Hey, I'm Renee Hobbs, and welcome to the Courageous RI podcast. Today, I'm here with Kent Lentzy, and he's the author of Learning to Depolarize. He founded an organization called Middle Ground School Solutions because he is trying to help us, educators and students alike, make our classrooms places where we can restore civility and democracy. Kent, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Renee. And we haven't known each other long enough to have encountered this little blip, but we probably in the old land, somebody pronounces it Lentzy, but we're pronouncing it Lentzy.
Yeah, Lentzy. Yeah. Thanks so much. So how did it happen that you got to write a book with this great title, Learning to Depolarize?
Yeah, well, what happened first was that I was a teacher for 20 years, so invested in learning. And what also happened along the way was that I got increasingly concerned about political polarization in this country. And one way to tell the story is that over the last few years in my teaching, I had the chance to engage in some really exciting partnerships where I had my kids in Massachusetts partnered with kids in Alabama, and we were helping to break down stereotypes and our impression of the other and so on and so forth. And that was really cool. And separately, I also led my colleagues in some work at my school, just in practicing how to speak with each other across lines of politics, across the political divide, which is really kind of forbidden territory. So these were a couple of experiences I had that really charged me up and made me think it was time to start thinking full time about how we educators can help prepare kids to face the challenges of a polarized society. I was in graduate school in the 2004-2005 school year, and during my graduate program, I wrote a paper about polarization and about how educators could, you know, be part of the remedy to prepare kids for polarization. And so while I've sort of convinced or fooled myself into thinking that I've been worried about this increasingly over the last few years, in fact, this has been on my mind a long time. And I think this is when people say to me, oh, that book is really timely. Everybody's thinking about polarization now. I increasingly realize I think we could have said that 5 years ago, it's really timely, or 10 years ago, or 15 years ago. And we have forgotten as this has become so normalized in our society that this is a challenge that's been going on a while.
Boy, that's a really interesting observation. I do feel that the media discourse in the political sphere has made it challenging to teach about media and politics since way before the advent of social media, right? So I remember doing some instructional materials to help teachers use social media in the 2008 election cycle. And the polarization topic was all over that election. So that's a really great way to think about. You've been thinking about this for a long, long time. Now, a lot of the listeners and viewers of this podcast probably don't quite understand why history teachers and civic teachers are so invested in this topic of depolarization, or in the broader concept of civic education. And we're celebrating Civic Education Week nationally and in Rhode Island. And so I wanted to ask you about that complicated word, citizenship. What does citizenship mean to you?
since I'm a teacher, I actually, my first inclination is to think about the word citizenship on a small scale, because so often as a teacher, I would be in conversations with colleagues, with students, with parents about my students as citizens of the classroom or as citizens of the school, right? So that was like a common descriptor or a common way to think about how our kids were doing. And so I have often thought about the people near me in terms of their citizenship. And I think what that has meant to me is relationships. So citizenship is kind of the manifestation of the relationships that we have with the others, right? And part of that is about rights, and part of that is responsibility. So this is a beloved phrase in, you know, civics education and history teachers, rights and responsibility. But then I got thinking about how we take citizenship for granted, those of us who don't need, for example, to prove our understanding of American government and basic civics to earn our citizenship badge, right? I don't have to do that every year. I got my citizenship when I was born, in my case, and it's just there, and I don't think about it. In the digital sphere, we are active citizens, whether we like it, whether we recognize it or not, in this digital ecosphere. And so, although it might be hidden to us or obscured at some point that there is citizenship at play, we are receiving the same relational phenomenon that happens in a classroom or in a country is happening in the digital world. We are receiving, we're in this relationship where we are receiving constantly messages and, you know, influence from those entities with whom we're connected digitally. And we are influencing, right, through our media, through our output, through our content creation.
That's pretty darn cool. And to situate a discussion of citizenship in relation to relationships is super powerful. And I really appreciate how when you do that, by situating citizenship as a type of relationship, it's so productive and fertile, right? It helps you say, you can be a citizen of my classroom. You can be a citizen of a workplace. You can be a citizen of a citizen of a country or of a ecosystem made up of zeros and ones, right? So relationships are characterized by some key features, and respect and trust are part of that, right? And when you talk about roles and responsibilities of citizenship, the way I think about that is those are decisions about our behavior in our relationships that make us trustworthy to others, to make others be able to depend on us, right? And so I'm struggling with where knowledge fits in this. So knowledge is important, but how important is knowledge really to citizenship? And why is history and civic education so darn focused on knowledge and not on relationships?
Knowledge is so important, and it's not going to go away. It's important to know things, although increasingly we're also able to gather knowledge quickly through our digital tools. But it's important to know things, right? That to be a sort of a literate citizen of our society. But
so knowledge helps the way we interpret things, right? So when you have knowledge, you have background knowledge, it affects the way you interpret your present reality.
Absolutely.
And I feel like, okay, so knowledge is important to your behavior and your relationships today. But I think a lot of us experienced civic education as kind of knowledge centric without so much focused on the habits of mind, the dispositions, the civic attitudes that are increasingly needed to address the relationships that are the fabric of civic life. So in a way that brings us to this topic of your book about depolarization. Teachers that I know are sticking very closely to teaching the facts of history and the facts of civics, because it's scary to think about what does it mean to teach the dispositions, the skills, and the habits of mind that are more relational driven. How can teachers and students help develop skills that lead to depolarization of our civic sphere?
Yeah, so you're right. You're absolutely right. Teachers are a little freaked out. I mean, many teachers are feeling like they're in a precarious position these days between a rock and a hard place, and trying to prepare kids for this complicated society, but also feeling like they're being squeezed from all sides about what is forbidden material, depending on one's perspective, and sort of a no-fly zone. And yes, like the habits of mind, I love that term. I've always, since I discovered that term 20-ish years ago, I've loved that term, habits of mind, and the skills and dispositions that we want to engender in kids. So that's where it is. Yep, knowledge is important, but skills, mindsets are probably more important from my perspective, because we can quickly gather knowledge. We can't quickly accrue skills and mindsets. Those take a long time to build up, and are done so through the benefit of good teaching, probably. So how can teachers help instill those skills, those mindsets, to help prepare kids to manage a polarized society? Yeah, there are a lot of ways. So I'll give you what I think is the most important. I think the starting point is for teachers to believe that that's important. And I sort of would pause and maybe repeat that. That in my experience, really well-intentioned teachers who are trying to find the answer to the question you ask, like, hey, how can I help out here? How can I help these kids have the skills they're going to need to navigate a fractured society in a really complicated landscape? And they're looking for tools. They're looking for tools to implement in the classroom. And I can talk about that a little bit too, but my counsel is to pause and take a breath and just make sure that we educators believe that has great value. And if so, I think we will find the ways. We will keep gathering different lessons, and we will keep adding to our toolkit if we think this is really important. And I emphasize that because I do, in my research and writing and work with schools, I find that that people try to build a little bit of a firewall between the world of education. So here I am, a classroom teacher, and I think, okay, let me teach my class. A firewall between that and kind of the political, storm that rages beyond. And I don't think that we can really build as clean a wall between those as we would like. And that gets messy, but it's just the reality that, from my point of view, the political informs the school, and the school informs our political discussions. It's a two-way street. So I think it starts with teachers saying, okay, yep, kids are going to occupy, they're going to navigate a challenging, politically fractured society. It's worth it to me to invest myself in trying to help them do that as skillfully as possible. I think it starts at a more practical level. I think nothing happens quickly in education. I think that things that stick and that have value tend to transcend a year-long experience in a classroom. I have a lot of humility as a teacher. I think that I don't individually make all that much difference in a kid's life. I think that collectively across the years, when there's continuity in the academic program, that makes an impact. So, building building environments, building communities within a classroom and within sort of like the whole grade level, within multi-grade levels, where there are clear, where there's a clear community agreement about how we speak to each other. Catchphrases like listen to understand, not to get loud. And I think I heard you say something for an upcoming initiative that you have. Listen, be more curious than furious, right? So right. There, but and that which is really cool. But so there are a whole bunch of messages that I think that we need to establish for kids and be consistent from one teacher to another about respect and about trying to build empathy and about creating a safe place, even amid viewpoint diversity, that will really convince people that it is in their best interest to take risks and to engage across lines of disagreement or whether when they're uncertain. That's in the physical environment. I think it starts there. I think that there are a whole bunch of powerful media literacy lessons that teachers can gather. And I think implementing those, I'm looking at the clock and I'm going to start to rush because I've got so much to say, but I think
can you give me an example? First of all, I want to just really like underline the point you just made, which is if teachers think this is important, if they firmly believe this is an essential a part of education for democracy, they're going to make time to do it. And moreover, they're not just going to do it in their own little classroom. They're going to work with their colleagues across the school level, across the district level, to ensure that these norms of civility, these practices of these roles and responsibilities of citizenship are learned by everyone through the whole cycle. I love that point because it's a team sport. You're just describing teachers playing a team sport, working collaboratively with their community. But I'd love you to paint me a picture, tell me a story. You did develop this really cool strategy of connecting your kids to kids in a completely different cultural milieu, right? And that pedagogy is fascinating to me. But I'm wondering about other like lessons that you can visualize for me and tell me, help me paint a picture of like what kinds of instructional practices to help support depolarization.
So I will try to do that. From my reading, you are a preeminent expert in media literacy, and I defer to you really in the area that I'm about to talk about. But I think my reading of the research on media literacy, what really grabs me, and